This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
People of power, we bring you powerful conversations. I'm loving this people of power. I'm always going to be using it now. We're going to turn our attention now to power ships. We didn't know much about them, by the way, until Minister Gwedamantashe's department announced the recently awarded companies for the Risk Mitigation Independent Power Producer Procurement Program, which aims, of course, to alleviate South Africa's electricity supply constraints. We are tired of load shedding. That I know for sure. We are tired of load reduction. That goes without saying. But, man, there has been a lot of conversation around independent power producers. But, nonetheless, I don't know much about power ships myself. So I've always been curious, reading up recently. And the opportunity came to have the man himself who's involved with these issues of power ships, Sichaba Moletsane, Director of Spilled Water Renewable Energy. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Thank you. Good morning to you and your listeners. Thanks to be. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us. Probably let's start with an education exercise before dealing with the controversial, topical issues around power ships. There's been a lot that has been said. Mm-hmm. You are quite aware of this because it's been quite public. Energy experts from all different directions are quite skeptical whether or not this is the right direction for the country to go. What is a power ship?
Well, in plain English, a power ship is really a power station that has just been built on a ship. And someone would ask, why would someone do that? And it's simply because it allows you to have a solution that is deployable very quickly, and you do not have to have the construction risk that you would have while you're building a power station on terrestrial ground. So this is basically all it is it's a ready-made power ship that was built in a dry dock by the Karadeniz Group and built to exacting and very high standards of quality, because both power and marine environments require that everything is done to particular standards. So it's really a power station that's on a ship.
A floating power station. Now we know about, you know, baseload conversations when we talk about built power stations. What is the input that leads to the production of energy in a power ship?
Well, in our particular case, you have LNG that is being used as a fuel to power the power ship's engines that are reciprocating engines. So instead of in a normal scenario like we have in South Africa with Eskom power stations, or majority of them, where you use coal to generate the steam for your steam turbines, we use LNG to generate the thermal power that is required to generate the electricity.
Now, we do know that LNG might not be readily available to the scale you might need it for these three power ships, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. Where are you going to be sourcing your LNG from?
Well, as part of the risk mitigation program that we all that was run as an open process, we had to supply, as part of our bidding requirements, where you get your fuel source. You have to sign what's called a gas supply agreement, and we have an exclusive arrangement with Shell that will give us or provide the required LNG for us for the period that the government requires us to have a minimum contract value for.
Now, you'll know that people are always watching in terms of any development as to whether it's going to have economic benefits to the country or not. And part of this has been this idea that there isn't going to be enough local procurement on LNG. Where is the benefit to the South African economy going to accrue?
Okay, there are quite a few areas where I think the South African economy will really benefit. I mean, we were awarded 1,220 megawatts in three different locations. That really equates to almost close to 1 million households that we will be able to provide power to, if you were to just say that's the people we're providing to. But our power goes into the grid. Secondly, that's enough for you to remove one stage of load shedding. A stage of load shedding is about 1,000 megawatts. So 1,220, that removes 1,000, one stage of load shedding. With the rest of the participants in the program, I mean, we're three of eight awards that were given by the department. The remainder make up to another, the total amount is about 1,800 that was awarded, 800 plus. That then means you're very close to a second stage of load shedding that you will be able to mitigate against. And as we all know, this load shedding has cost our economy about 380 billion over a 10-year period. So it is quite important that one understands that that is what's going to be mitigated against in terms of load shedding. More specific to the sites that we are on, our program, as part of the risk mitigation requirements that we had to fulfill, we had to have some social, economic development programs. We had to adhere to local enterprise development programs. And in that context, we've got about 60 million rand that we will be spending per site per year on local economic enterprise development and social economic development. That also entails us putting together an academy that will help to transfer skills in the three sites and for anyone else that is interested around the marine economy and how to work and be an individual that is now available to such a sector. So we will be partnering with accredited institutions in South Africa for that and making sure that we adhere to our commitments to this RFP that was issued. We will further then spend about 250 million rand per site per year on preferential procurement for those areas. This is going to be, I think, a welcomed injection of economic activity for such areas, considering what we've just been through through COVID and the like.
No doubt, a scheme like this, the biggest question becomes who is the host community? And you'll appreciate this. It happens all the time when there's exploration of mineral resources that are offshore. Who is the host community? So if you're looking at Saldanha Bay or Richards Bay, how do you calculate the radius of what qualifies as a host community, particularly as it will have implications when you are doing this preferential procurement or the socioeconomic development in those communities?
What we have done is we are busy engaging with our relevant stakeholders. We could not engage before preferred bidder status because we do not want to create an expectation that was not be there. So we are in the process of engaging with stakeholders in the various sites, as in Richards Bay, Kabecha, as it's now called, or Kucha, and Saldanha. And we are going to be speaking to the local economic development practitioners from the various municipalities and metros and understanding how they would like us to be able to dovetail into programs that they have and how to actually deal with the communities that are under their auspices in terms of what we will then be putting through as a program of activities in those specific sites. So we don't want to take a parachuting approach and just come in and say, this is what we want to do. We're actually engaging with the local communities, the local structures, and are using that to assist us in creating a program that will be most impactful and will also add value to those communities.
Well, I think I'm getting in trouble here. I didn't ask you to explain what LNG is, and I took it for granted that. In fact, I'm seeing a tweet, so I think let's check back a bit. When we talk about LNG, what are we talking about? Where is it sourced? How is it mined?
Okay, well, I think LNG is otherwise known as liquid natural gas. It is a gas that comes out, it's probably what you call a fossil fuel, and it's mined in some instances naturally on its own, or it's a byproduct when people are mining for other resources. So it is, I think Mozambique is one of those that there's been a huge LNG find. It's all over the world. We've got various areas where there are LNG reserves, and we then get, I think Shell has the ability to then procure from global markets, and I think they have their own facilities as well, and as such then are able to supply us throughout the year.
Is there a relationship between LNG and shale gas, someone might ask?
Unfortunately, I'm not a scientist, so I wouldn't be able to answer that convincingly, but I really don't know, so it would be a bit presumptuous of me to respond and say yay or nay.
Yeah.
Next thing I'm going to be quoted as is what I'm learning with media.
Some of your detractors have spoken on the environmental impact of an operation such as yours, not only because of how LNG is sourced, but also because of the carbon emissions that are anticipated in your operation. Are you worried about carbon emissions levels that will be coming out of these power ships?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm not worried or I'm worried. I think the question is, the whole program that risk mitigation was under the premise that all the technology mixes that are going to be allowed in the risk mitigation program were things that were run through a stakeholder process through the integrated resource plan, which spent many years going back and forth with government, public stakeholders, and in that they agreed on, or it was agreed on, what resources or what fuels can be allowed in terms of our energy mix. And natural gas is one of them. And as such, government has also got procurement programs that are aimed at just a gas to power program. So for me, it's not a question of whether I am or not. I think our government and public has spent many years going through what do we need as South Africa as an energy mix to go forward and to increase the capability of our stability of our energy for our economy to grow. Because as it's been with all the load shedding, you can imagine it's cost a lot of jobs. It's made a lot of plants close down. Now it's been exacerbated by the whole COVID situation.
One of the things that have come up strongly on independent power producers is just the cost to the state via Eskom. Mm-hmm. One may say, yes, there's great desperation for us insofar as mitigating against load shedding, but what is it going to cost Eskom to procure from your entity?
I think the risk mitigation program was run in such a manner that they said it was a open and agnostic technology mix of bidders. So in that, the government and the IPP office have awarded us based on pricing as a primary aspect, and the remainder, social economic development and all the other issues, as the remaining part of the evaluation criteria. In terms of our evaluation price, we were the second cheapest bid that was awarded preferred bidder. There was one bid that was awarded before us, then it was one of our Kuha sites, then it was our Richards Bay site, which is number three in total, and I think our Saldanha site is number five or number six in terms of the least cost benchmark if you are looking at it from all those that have been awarded. So the IPP office did mention that this is the least cost, least regret award and procurement for the type of energy that we're looking for. And I'd like to clarify, the type of energy that the government or the risk mitigation program was looking for is a more, it's something that's called dispatchable power, which allows us to have more stable power for longer.
But in terms of unit cost, what are we looking at on average, though, from these three power ships?
I think on average, we're at 1 rand if we average our total costs of all the three. We're probably at 1 rand 50 something.
1 rand 50 something. That would be per kilowatt hour.
Yeah.
That would be there to the economy, because that's what Eskom would have to pay you. I just want to go to a short ad break and deal with more on this issue around pricing. I saw an article on the Mail and Guardian from your company that was dealing with a complicated ownership structure for me. So I do want you to talk us through that because you've put it out on the public domain. That line is 0861-987-000. We are talking about power ships with Lichaba Muletsane. Sorry, I get new names on Power Talk. Now I'm giving it to you. Forgive me about that. That line is 0861-987-000.
9 a.m. to noon. This is Power Talk on Power 98.7.
Okay, welcome back. 9 minutes to 11 on 0861-987-000. I have Miesha. Miesha, good morning, bro.
Lukwana, morning. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
Listen, and to your guest, please get in touch with Ugogo. It's going to be a West tongue twister when we add doctor to your Mongolian name. And
I must sort this thing out. Maybe I must go on a power ship, Miesha.
Listen, it's going to be West. Look, Anna, you know, and by the way, morning to your guest. We had this conversation with Ayabong, I think it was 4 to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And what it exposes and what it says. Actually, I'm very interested and I'm grateful that they decided to do the power ship coming into this country. Because I said it years ago, it could mitigate this story of us dealing with this constant power cuts. Look, Anna, there's another dimension because I heard your guest is talking of LNG. Yeah. We are the masters of it through Sasol. In the world, we are the best. We are the best in the world because that is what Sasol. In Louisiana, they are doing it.
Mm.
We are the best, and yet we're going to outsource to somebody else. When we actually started it in South Africa, it was started by the National Party. That knowledge, that blueprint of everything is in South Africa's hands. We are the leader more than everybody in the world, including when you go and get water from the sea, desalinize it, and use it. In Saudi Arabia, it is actually Sasol who did it. Now, on the power ship, there's a different dimension. Look, when you see these aircraft carriers, the U.S. has got most of them. Like, one of the biggest is the Gerald R. Ford. It is a big carrier. That thing is nuclear-powered. Are you aware that one of those, I hear he's talking of 1 million people, one aircraft carrier can power the whole of Cape Town? Not 1 million people. If you get the Gerald R. Ford and it is nuclear-powered, you will only refuel it after 25 years. It can power the entire Cape Town. Now, the U.S. does commission this. They decommission them. When they decommission them, they bring something new. You would have thought our government will go to them and say, we know they are hefty on price, about $10 billion, $11 billion, but we don't need the landing. We don't need these guns on it. This power ship, which is nuclear-powered, which can power the whole of Cape Town, take out all these things. How much can we get it for? Reconfigure it for us so that we land one in Cape Town, we land one in Durban. You are cutting the cost of power in the three major cities. Whether you put it somewhere in PE, one in Cape Town, one in Durban, you save that amount of power. I wonder, because I realize now they are talking about it now. When we had load shedding for all these years, it shows their lack of knowledge. We've got guys in government who are merely great ones.
Miesha,
this should have been a solver for years ago.
Let us leave it on that brutal point and let's play it by ear on the radio. Senzo, good morning.
Good morning. Lukwana, I just wanted to ask, are we still buying tap as independent power suppliers coming through? Are we buying from Eskom or are we directly buying from independent power suppliers? Because if Eskom is going to act as a middleman, then we're still getting ripped off. I don't need a middleman. Rather, I would go, if I live local, maybe close to the power station, why is there a need to be supplied by Eskom?
Okay.
Whereas I can get light from them.
I hear you very well, Senzo. I mean, you did say you are plugging into the grid, and I suppose Senzo's question is, why aren't you dealing directly with the municipality, Eqebega, or down in Saldanha Bay and selling to them? Because now the government has opened that opportunity for municipalities to have different ways of procuring energy.
I think in our case, we responded to an RFP that was put out by government on risk mitigation. And this is how we bid. If maybe there's an RFP that comes out from municipalities directly, we would also consider looking at it. But as it stands, that's what was put out to the public for open bidding process, and that's how we responded.
Miesha, talking about, outsourcing from Shell, and, you mentioned there exclusively. Is there an opportunity for other players such as Sasol to come on board and be providers of LNG to your operation?
Well, I'm not sure whether Shell actually has any spare capacity of gas. I mean, they've had a lot of, they've been running a gas footprint in South Africa for a long time. But we ran an open tender for everyone to supply us with gas. We had international opportunities or international companies come back to us and respond, and that's how we chose the best priced and best terms that we can get was with Shell. Remember, LNG is not as well uptaken in South Africa as everyone would think, and we think we're also bringing another opportunity for there to be more gas that'll go into industry. I mean, industry would love to have more LNG to be able to run some of their processes. So it's an opportunity for industry to do that. As I said in my webinar yesterday, the requirements for us in terms of our infrastructure is that we utilize our infrastructure for what we need for our power plant. But at the same time, if we have requests for utilization of that infrastructure by third parties, our licensing requires that we actually do that according to parameters set by the NERSA regulations. So if there's a land requirement for LNG, they'll make a pipe and it'll go right through into land and they can then distribute it from there. So for us, I think it's an amazing opportunity for our industries to also participate in this gas economy by being a catalyst to them, because we've brought the infrastructure that allows for gas now to be more prolifically usable in the country.
Yeah. Yamkela, good morning.
Good morning, Lukona, and good morning to your guest. I just want to touch on to say that here we have LNG, which is sourced offshore because we don't have a high capacity of production. Mm. But as a country, we have a lot of coal. And South Africa was one of the first countries after Germany to actually do the coal to petroleum technology. And as I'm aware, you can also turn coal into natural gas through a gasification process. Could we not have also looked into how we can benefit the coal economy that is starting to fade away with the processes of doing away with coal-powered stations, to turn it into saying, how can we then take these resources of coal that we have and start gasification and using them as part of this LNG and other processes that need liquefied natural gas processes, instead of procuring it outside, because I'm very sure that Shell gets it offshore. Okay. As we don't have resources here in the country.
Yamkela, let's hold it there, because I want my guest to have a response before news. Yamkela in Sandton. Yamkela, dealing with, I mean, any possibilities of coal to gas being part of the plan to make sure that there's benefits to the South African economy broadly?
Look, I'm unfamiliar with the coal to gas technology. I mean, I think that's what Sasol uses. And I don't know what capacity they have to be able to produce enough coal to gas to be able to provide for power stations, whether it's ours or any of the other bidders, because there are a few of us that are using LNG as a source. So I think every bidder would welcome a new gas if it's available at the right price. No, I don't think it would be such an issue. But as I said, I have no knowledge of how that technology works and whether there is actually capacity in South Africa for that.
In the last minute I have with you, Car Powership SA is owned by 49% South African black-owned and women-empowered company, Power Group SA, with the remaining 51% held by Kara Deniz Holdings. I saw a very complicated graph of the ownership structure. Mm-hmm. In simple terms, who owns this Powership's productions?
In simple terms, Power Group, as you've seen as in our Mail and Guardian item, we are four entrepreneurs that have come together and we own the 49% of Car Powership South Africa. We have a group called Power Group. And the complicated structure that you are seeing is probably all the other aspects of it, where that holding company owns 100% of each site that was bid. So all of those sites have to have their own standalone company. That's according to what our regulations are in our bidding structures. and each site will have an operations and maintenance company, and so on and so forth. So those structures that you see beneath it are really about the operations and how those have been structured as per what the RFP required, that each project is a standalone project so that it is ring-fenced and it has its own operations.
Operating
so,
model.
Exactly. And its own financial model. So every one of these projects has to stack up independently on their own. Correct.
Tshaba Moletsane, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you to your listeners for calling in and actively engaging in this debate.
We hope to have you some more as this conversation continues, and I see some parliamentarians are also part of the conversation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.